This podcast is brought to you by Bethany Trinity Presbyterian Church. Thanks for listening.
Now, before we have our sermon by Pastor Andrew, let me invite Celestial up to read today's passage from Revelation chapter 12.
Morning, church. If you have your church Bibles, so you turn to page 1241. We'll be reading from Revelation 12. A great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with a moon under her feet and a crown of 12 stars on her head. She was pregnant and cried out in pain as she was about to give birth. Then another sign appeared in heaven, an enormous red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns on its heads. Its tail swept a third of the stars out of the sky and flung them to the earth. The dragon stood in front of the woman who was about to give birth, so that it might devour her child the moment he was born. She gave birth to a son, a male child, who will rule all the nations with an iron scepter. And her child was snatched up to God and to his throne. The woman fled into the wilderness to a place prepared for her by God, where she might be taken care of for 1,260 days. Then war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought back. But he was not strong enough, and they lost their place in heaven. The great dragon was hurled down, that ancient serpent called the devil, or Satan, who leads the world astray. He was hurled to the earth, and his angels with him. Then I heard a loud voice in heaven saying, "Now have come the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of his Messiah. For the accuser of our brothers and sisters, who accuses them before God day and night, has been hurled down. They triumphed over him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. They did not love their lives so much as to shrink from death. Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you who dwell in them. But woe to the earth and sea, because the devil has gone down to you. He is filled with fury, because he knows that his time is short." When the dragon saw that he had been hurled to the earth, he pursued the woman who had given birth to the male child. The woman was given the 2 wings of a great eagle, so that she might fly to the place prepared for her in the wilderness, where she would be taken care of for a time, times and half a time, out of the serpent's reach. Then from his mouth the serpent spewed water like a river to overtake the woman and sweep her away with the torrent. But the earth helped the woman by opening its mouth and swallowing the river that the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. Then the dragon was enraged at the woman and went off to wage war against the rest of her offspring, those who keep God's commands and hold fast their testimony about Jesus. This is the word of God.
All right, let me invite Pastor Andrew up to deliver our sermon for today.
Okay, great. Okay, many years ago, there was a young man who was sitting where you all are sitting today. Somebody had actually invited him to church, and he's sitting there, not exactly in these seats, but he learned about Jesus, heard the preaching, and then he wanted to become a Christian. So he signed up for our baptism class, and he was very excited to be baptized. And then he went home to tell his parents, to invite them to his baptism. But his parents said that if he got baptized, they would disown him, he'd get kicked out of the house, and they didn't want to see him anymore. I remember talking to somebody about that when it happened. And I was thinking to myself, don't you think that's a really extreme reaction? Imagine if this young man had gone home and told his parents that he wanted to migrate to New Zealand. I don't think his parents would have said, okay, we're going to kick you out and disown you. Or imagine if they heard that he wanted to quit his job to become a professional esports player. I'm not sure whether his parents also would say, okay, you're disowned, get out of the house. Do you ever feel that it's quite extreme, the reaction that the world has against Christians? Because that's what we see in the context of today's passage. If you look at Revelation chapter 1, the author of the book of Revelation, the Apostle John, what happened to him? He was exiled for being a Christian, right? He was kicked out of his own country. When we look at Revelation chapter 2 and chapter 3, what is the reaction to Christians there? We see that people are excluded from society, but even worse, they're executed for their faith. Why do Christians face such hatred, hostility, and opposition? Don't you feel that it's a bit extreme? How do you make sense of this extreme reaction to people who are Christians? And that's what today's passage is about. Right? Revelation chapter 12 is about why does the world react so strongly with opposition and hostility to Christians? Now, the passage begins with a vision. And the vision has three characters, but the characters are actually called signs, right? Chapter 12, verse 1, a great sign appeared. Chapter 12, verse 3, another sign appeared. Now, usually when you see a sign, the sign means something, right? The sign signifies something. You're meant to understand what's behind the sign. It's directing us to something. So what are these signs and what are they trying to tell us? Okay, so what's the first sign? The first sign is about a woman. So in verse 1, it says, there was a great sign that appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and with the moon under her feet and a crown of 12 stars on her head. Now, this sounds very cryptic, very mysterious. What does it mean? Well, I think for the Jews, these symbols, stars, sun, and the moon, they would actually think back to their Old Testament. And so what does it mean? Well, if you look up here on the slide, does it work? No, not working. Okay. So if you see here, the woman actually has the stars and the moon over her. And if you go back to Genesis chapter 37, verse 9 to 10, these actually refer back to God's people in the beginning of God's nation, Israel. Right? So Jacob, if you remember Jacob, you know the Old Testament, he's given the name Israel. And one of his favorite sons is Joseph. And Joseph has this dream of his brothers, the 11 stars, and the sun and the moon bowing before him. And so this woman actually symbolizes the 12 tribes of Israel. So this is God's people, Israel. Okay, the 12 tribes. And then in the next vision, she's pregnant. She cries out in pain as she's about to give birth. And another sign appeared in heaven, an enormous red dragon. Okay, again, what does this all mean? Like, pregnant woman, she's in pain, and there's a serpent, right? This great dragon. Now, if the first picture, the first sign is of Israel, God's people, then the second sign is really looking back to the very beginning of all time, right? Which is Genesis chapter 3, Genesis chapter 1, where we see that right in the very beginning, God's people was not Israel, but Adam and Eve. And Eve was tempted by the serpent to sin. And as a result of this sin by Eve, God curses Adam, Eve, and the serpent. And what does he say? He says, because of the great sin of the serpent and of Eve, several things happen. One is that the woman, as part of the curse, will have pain in childbearing. But more importantly, God actually makes this promise that through this childbearing, through this painful childbearing, there will be an offspring, a child who will be this serpent crusher, who will crush the head of Satan, who will crush the serpent. So then, how do we understand these signs? Well, what it's saying is God's people, Israel, in a sense, are pregnant. She's pregnant with the promised serpent crusher who will come through God's people and crush Satan. But as we look at this picture, Satan is not just this small little snake on the ground which is easy to step on and crush, but instead, this serpent is pictured as something really fearsome. It is described as an enormous red dragon. Now, I guess if we are, some of us have been Christians for a while, we take that symbol for granted and we think, okay, enormous red dragon, what's the big deal, right? But think for a moment, this is pictured as an enormous red dragon. Red for violent, red for bloody. And this is a big dragon. And we see the fearsomeness of this dragon with the symbols of how it has 7 heads, 10 horns, and 7 crowns on its head. Now, as we go through the book of Revelation, we've seen that numbers are not just numerical calculations of 7 things, right? 7 is a really important number in the book of Revelation because it means completeness, fullness. So this dragon here has 7 heads. Hey, what do you think of 7 heads? Heads means authority, right? You know, you have the head of the department. So this enormous red dragon has the power of powerful authority. Horn is the power of strength, you know, like the horn of a bull. It's got 10 horns, very powerful being. And also, it's got very strong rule, right? Crown represents rule. So here we have this enormous dragon full of violence and bloody, with power, authority, and rule. Now, if you follow popular culture and you read books or watch movies, think of the image of the powerful dragon. So if you ever watch like the Lord of the, not Lord, okay, before we go to like the Game of Thrones, right? The most powerful creature in the Game of Thrones, which determines like how the nations fare in the Game of Thrones, is always the dragon. It's always the dragon. In fact, if you watch The House of the Dragon, which I happened to watch one series on my plane trip, there's a saying, whoever controls the dragon rules. Whoever controls the dragon rules. Even in like in The Hobbit and in The Lord of the Rings, you always see the dragon as the most powerful being in that story. And so here in this vision, we see the dragon, this enormous, red, powerful being, looming over God's people, Israel, wanting to devour the woman and the child. Why? Because this child is the promised serpent crusher who will defeat and crush underfoot Satan. But how can this be, right? If you imagine this enormous dragon and this pregnant woman, who is going to win? The pregnant woman and the baby? Not likely, right? I mean, pregnant woman and a baby, not much chance against a big dragon, right? So what happens then? How is this going to happen? What's going to happen in this fearsome battle? Because this dragon is very destructive. Right from the very beginning, we've seen that this dragon is an ancient enemy to humanity. Right? So right at the very beginning of Genesis already, we see that the serpent has harmful intentions, hostility, destructive intentions to God's people. And we see it here in this passage. Now, do you really believe that? Like, do you really believe that Satan is really destructive even to today? Because I think in modern society, in secular world, we kind of make fun of Satan, and it's only those like foolish, single, teenage ladies who go down into the basement in the dark, right? They are the only people who get attacked by Satan, right? But in the picture here, it actually says all of God's people actually facing this fearsome foe who wants to destroy us. He wants to destroy the church. He wants to destroy humanity. He's not a friend of humanity. Recently, I read an article, some statistics saying that, you know, the English Premier League is the most profitable of all the leagues in the world, right? Apparently, every year, the English Football League earns £6 billion. But you know the porn industry? They are worth £100 billion industry a year. Oh, sorry, $100 US a year. Imagine that the most popular porn internet site receives 42 billion visits a year. 42 billion visits a year. Now, how is that possible? Isn't it because, as we read in Revelation 12, that Satan is this great deceiver and he wants to deceive people into sin? He wants to deceive people into idolatry of sex. Even Christians, right? How many Christians are caught up in this problem? And on top of that, the main job that Satan does, as we read Revelation 12, is that 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, he is accusing Christians and people of sin so that they are not just destroyed in this life, but they go into damnation for eternity. Now that is who Satan is, and that is the destructiveness of Satan. Now the question is, who then can defeat this fearsome, destructive force which is opposed to God's people? Well, let's look at verse 5. The woman gave birth to a son, a male child who will rule all the nations with an iron scepter, and a child was snatched up to God and to his throne. So, if you look here in this passage, there's this fearsome dragon, but in the coming of Jesus, he's actually cast down. Now, it's really interesting that in two verses, in the Revelation chapter 5 and 6, John actually sees the whole of Jesus' life, death, resurrection, ascension. All right, you think about it, in the Gospels, and say, Luke, how many chapters are there in Luke? Do you all know? Okay, I better check myself, right? It's 24 chapters in Luke. Okay, 16 chapters in Mark, 21 verses in John. But here, it's compressed into two verses. And in the coming of Jesus, he is the promised serpent crusher who crushes this enormous dragon. See, in the fantasy of Game of Thrones, in the fantasy of House of Dragon, in the fantasy of The Hobbit, the fantasy of The Lord of the Rings, the dragon is the most powerful force in this world. But in the reality of our world, God is the most powerful force. And that's why, if you look in verse 5, God is the one who brings his son into the world, the serpent crusher who rules the nations with an iron scepter. This child is snatched up by God, up to God, and rules and reigns in heaven. And therefore, what happens here is that because of the coming of Jesus through the power of God, Satan is defeated, Satan is doomed, and Satan is once and for all gone. Now, what we need to do then is we need to keep reminding ourselves of this once and for all defeat of Satan through the power of God in Jesus. You see, many of the pictures that were given in the gospel show us how Jesus, the coming of Jesus, defeats this fearsome and destructive satanic force in this world. So here we see in Mark chapter 3, Jesus is the strong man who can plunder the house of Satan. In Luke chapter 10, when Jesus speaks to disciples, he says the coming of Jesus means that Satan falls right from heaven and is destroyed. In John chapter 12, Jesus, when he comes, drives out Satan from power in this world. And so as we look at this passage, what we need to do then as Christians is we need to hold on to Jesus. Because you and I and all of us here, we cannot stand before the fearsome and destructive power of this enormous dragon. Right? Alone, we cannot win. We will definitely lose. We have to hold on to Jesus because he is the one who is the serpent crusher. He is the one who has defeated Satan already. Now, what does it mean then for us to hold on to Jesus so that we have victory over this fearsome and destructive force? Well, the passage tells us in verse 11, the way that we hold on to Jesus and we have victory is that they triumphed over him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. They did not love their lives so much as to shrink from death. Now, I want us to pay close attention here. There are two things that we need to do as Christians to hold on to Jesus and have victory over this fearsome red dragon. And what are they? A, hold on by the blood of the Lamb, Jesus. We need to keep holding on to Jesus and his work on the cross, because that means that when Satan accuses us, when Satan brings our case before God, we are innocent. We are righteous because Jesus has paid for it. But notice the second thing that we need to do. We need to, it says there, triumph over him by the blood of the word of their testimony. Now, this is quite important, right? Because I remember when I was studying at university once, we came out of an exam, and I remember a friend of mine was saying, oh, you know, that exam was really easy, and I finished it so fast, like, I didn't even need the full 3 hours. And then the rest of us were saying to him, like, how can that be, right? Like, we were all struggling away, we couldn't even finish. And then we realized that he misread the question. The question said, you have to do part A and part B. But he thought it was, you just do part A or part B. I think he ended up failing the exam. Now, I think as Christians, we make the same mistake. We think that we just do part A or part B. We triumph over Satan, we hold on to Jesus, because we just do part A. We just hold on to the blood of the Lamb. But we don't realize that we have to do part B. Part B is by the word of their testimony. We have to give testimony, we have to witness to Jesus in order to hold on to him and triumph through him. Now, why does this happen? Why is it so difficult to hold on to Jesus by witnessing and giving testimony to Jesus? I think part of the problem is that they did not love their lives so much as to shrink from death. We might be scared of witnessing and giving testimony to Jesus because we are loving life and we are shrinking away from death. I think the historical context might be a bit helpful. I read this book many, many years ago. It's like a classic. I think it's kind of been reprinted many, many times. But when it first came out, like, I don't know, when I was very young, it was like the book that everybody was reading. I went back to it recently, and it actually said that during the time that the book of Revelation was written and actually circulated, and soon after as well, for the Roman Empire, it was a capital offense at different times to be a Christian. If you were a Christian, you didn't worship the emperor, you could get executed. But you know, the Romans, they had many things on their mind, right? They were busy invading countries, they had all these problems with other people. And actually what happened in the Roman Empire was that at many times the Romans did not actively go out and look for Christians. It's not as if like, nothing else to do, and we're just going to attack the Christians, right? It's like they had a lot of things to do. But if it came to their attention that you were a Christian, then they would come after you and you would probably die. So the great temptation then in that context would be keep quiet, right? To be a secret Christian, to be a private Christian, to not witness and give testimony to Jesus, and just hold on to Jesus by the blood of the Lamb. But Jesus says that's not faithful holding on him. If you want to be a follower of Jesus, you cannot be ashamed of Jesus. You must testify and give witness to Jesus if you want to triumph over Satan. Now, I have a good friend who joined me to play golf many years ago. And he told me this quite sad story. He's quite an older person now. And for many years, he was not a Christian. And so he used to play golf with another group of people. And they were really close. They used to play golf all the time, go overseas to play golf. Their families used to go on family holidays. But this man actually became a Christian because his son became a Christian, then he got converted. So after he got converted, he started sharing the gospel with his golfing friends. But then as he kept sharing the gospel and witnessing to Jesus, they stopped inviting him to play golf with them. He didn't get invited anymore to the golfing trips, and the families didn't go on holiday together. He told me that he was very sad about what happened, but the good thing that happened was one of the sons of his golfing friends actually became a Christian through him, and today is a pastor. Now, here was a person, in a sense, who didn't love his golfing life so much that he was willing to not share or witness or give testimony to Jesus. So I wonder for ourselves, are there parts of our lives which we love so much that we are unwilling to actually give testimony or to witness for Jesus? Because Jesus says, that's not what holding on and triumphing over Satan really is. But then why then, if Jesus has already won us this victory, why then do we as Christians suffer? Why do we all suffer? Why is it the world has so much hostility and hatred towards us? Well, let us look then to verse 6 and verse 12. In verse 6, it has this strange number, right? The woman, God's people, fled into the wilderness to a place prepared for her by God where she might be taken care of for 1260 days. Okay, 1260 days. It says there in a parallel verse, in verse 12, it says, therefore rejoice, you heavens, you who dwell in them, but woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has gone down to you. He is filled with fury because he knows that his time is short. So what is this 1260 days, and why is it short? Well, I think this timeline here on the screen is helpful if you can see it. I think that what it means is that this period represents the 1260 days or 42 months. Now, why 1260? Why 42 months? I'm not really sure. But what it does mean is that there is an ending to the time. There is an ending to the time. There's a discrete period of time, it begins, and then it ends. But what happens during this 1260 days? What happens during this 42 months? Well, it keeps repeating to us over and over again, right? There's this repetition tool. It keeps telling us that during this time, Satan is hurled down. He's hurled down. Now, this idea of being hurled down, I think, means two things. One, he's hurled down means he's defeated, right? He's defeated, he's hurled down. But the problem that he's hurled down is, where is he hurled down to? He's hurled down out of heaven to here. And that's why it says there, woe, right? Woe to the earth, it says in verse 12. And the sea, because the devil has gone down to you. And what is his mood? What is the mood of Satan? What is the mood of this great dragon? He is angry. He is livid. He is raging. He is filled with fury. And he's going to strike out at God's people, the woman, and her offspring. And that's why during this time, we experience so much suffering as Christians. Because as we turn back the curtain and see what's behind all the suffering, it is because there is this big, frustrated, raging, angry Satan, this red dragon, this enormous dragon, who is waging war against the church, God's people, and the offspring of God's people, all the Christians that are to come. Now, how do we survive then? I think knowing that Jesus has already won, knowing that the time is limited, encourages us to keep persevering. My dad's brother from Melbourne came over the last few weeks. He was telling me this really interesting story about how in his family, they have 16 children, including two girls who were given away. So I think that's 18 kids, right? Could you imagine that my great-grandmother could alone solve part of the Singapore fertility problem, right? But during the Japanese occupation, the Japanese would come and they were all living in Ipoh. The Japanese soldiers would come and all the daughters had to be hidden and rushed off. And the grandfather, my father's father, would be periodically slapped around and beaten up because the Japanese soldiers were very frustrated because they couldn't find the food, or my grandfather was a bicycle salesman. They wanted bicycle parts, or they wanted to find the daughters. But they survived, right? They survived. By the end of the war, listening to the BBC, they knew that the Japanese were already defeated. They just have to survive to the end. Does anybody know how long the Japanese occupation of Malaya and Singapore was? Okay, anyway, you have to ask ChatGPT. But anyway, it's 1,277 days. Now, we're not saying that the Japanese occupation is equal to this 1,260 days, because obviously 1,260 days is a symbolic number. But in a sense, we are living the same time. We know that Satan is already defeated. We know that salvation has already come. The kingdom of Jesus has come. Salvation is already here. We have just got to survive this short period of time. We know that if we keep trusting in Jesus, God will protect us. And that's why in the last section, we see this strange picture of the dragon pouring water out of his mouth, trying to pursue the woman and overwhelm her with, I don't know, saliva or water or something, right? Now, you can read 100 commentaries and we'll never really get to the bottom of what this image really means. But probably what it's trying to show is that Satan is trying to overwhelm God's people, overwhelm the church with either the typical things that we've read so far, which is deception, trying to overwhelm the church with deception, right? Or is trying to overwhelm the church with destruction, or is trying to overwhelm the church with his accusations and charges. But we see in this picture that God will protect his people. God will protect his church. Even if they have to die, God will protect them to the end. And that's the main thing in life. The main thing in life is not death. The main thing in life is getting to the end and being victorious over Satan and being with God forever. That is the main purpose in life. So in conclusion, I want to ask you if you... So only God protects us. Okay, so I want you to tell me if you recognize this sound. You're paying attention? Okay, that's enough of that. Oh, sorry. Oh, sorry, sorry. Sorry, sorry, sorry. Okay, sorry about that. Okay, so I'm sure many of you recognize the sound. What is that sound? That's the Singapore Civil Defence Force alert sound. Okay, we hear it like in Total Defence Day. We hear it like, we really heard it like a few days ago, right? Now, thank God that every time we hear that sound, it's just a drill, right? never reality happening. We never like acted out. It's always a drill. But if it were to happen for real, if it was a real alert, it probably mean that Singapore was under attack by somebody and we would have to be ready, right? We have to be ready. We have to be ready for waging war. And that's what Revelation 12 is, right? It's like this SCDF alert siren telling you, look, Satan is waging war against you now. And when you're at war, the only thing that matters is winning, right? Surviving. And it tells us the only way we can survive and win is to hold on to Jesus, because only Jesus, the serpent crusher, can win. And winning is the only thing. And we only win by the blood of the Lamb and by giving testimony to Jesus, by witnessing, not shrinking away from the love of, from death, because we love life so much. So I hope that for all of us, this is a lesson that we will learn today. We will not be afraid of suffering because of Jesus, because we know the true reality behind it. Let's go to God in prayer. Dear Father, as we come before you today, we recognize that all of us here, if we are faithful before you, we'll suffer unreasonable, unexpected, and extreme hostility, hatred, and opposition from the world. Help us to see behind that opposition lies the great ancient enemy, that fearsome and destructive force of Satan. Help us to see that Satan has been defeated, that you are victorious through your son, Jesus, but he is raging. He is frustrated. He is lashing out at your people. He's lashing out at the offspring of your church. That he will wage war, a terrible war against us. And through all means possible, by deception, by destruction, by lies, by accusation, seek to destroy us. Dear Father, help us to always be holding on to Jesus, because that's the only way that we win. And help us to hold on by the blood of Jesus on the cross and by witnessing and testifying to Jesus, that we will not love life so much that we will shrink from death. For we know that the main purpose is to win and to persevere till Jesus comes again. We pray for all these things in Jesus Christ. Amen.
All right. Thank you, Pastor Andrew, for the sermon. Now, let us take a few minutes to consolidate our thoughts and also share with the person to the left or to the right of you some of your thoughts. So we have two discussion questions for today. The first one is, am I winning or losing against the ancient Satan? Second one is, what do I need to change in my thinking or living?
Thanks for listening to this podcast brought to you by Bethany Trinity Presbyterian Church. For more information, visit us online at busypc.sg.